the context of these for-profit facilities and overall less people dying in these facilities.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Of course, we'll continue to follow this and whether or not the governor signs this ban on for-profit prisons. Hamid Yazdan Panah is an immigration attorney with the California Collaborative for Immigrant Justice. That does it for our broadcast here in San Francisco. We'll be here again tomorrow. Nermeen Sheikh will be speaking tonight in Ithaca, New York at 7 o'clock. Check our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Libby Rainey, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Tarina Nadura, Tamari Astudio, Maria Tarasena, and Dennis Moynihan. Mike DeFilippo and Miguel Nogueira are engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley and Miriam Barnard, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grand, David Prude, Ishmael Darrow, Vesta Gadars, Karl Marxer. I'm Amy Goodman here in San Francisco. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. It's 8 o'clock. This is KBOO Portland, and Joanne Hardesty is next with Voices from the Edge.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of KOTO, Beyond Horizons, on Sunday, October 6th, from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Agnes Flanagan Chapel at Lewis and Clark College in Portland. The KOTO is the national instrument of Japan. At this performance, Oregon KOTO Kai, a Portland-based Japanese KOTO ensemble, will feature world-renowned KOTO virtuoso Kazue Sawoyi. Again, that's KOTO, Beyond Horizons, on Sunday, October 6th, from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Agnes Flanagan Chapel at Lewis and Clark College, 0615 Southwest Palatine Hill Road in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Voices from the Edge. I am Joanne Hardesty, your host, and thrilled to be here today. I don't spend enough time at KBOO nowadays because I got that little job downtown, you know. Today, I am honored to have in the studio the president of the Portland NAACP, Branch 1120. But before I introduce him, I want to give you a little background about the NAACP, because I know in my time as president, there were a lot of misperceptions about who the NAACP is and who they represent. So, Portland NAACP branch was founded in 1914 by Dr. J.N. Merriman as the first president and Beatrice Merrill Kennedy, editor of the African-American newspaper, The Advocate, as its first secretary. To date, the Portland NAACP branch is the oldest continuously chartered branch west of the Mississippi. Since opening its doors, the NAACP Portland refused to shy away from one of the greatest tasks that Americans sanctioned by the Declaration of Independence to uphold, protecting the singular belief that all men are created equal and ensuring that Portland upheld its civil responsibilities to do the same. The Portland NAACP branch has been steadily involved in establishing and upholding civil rights for the African American community and all people in Portland. Here are just a few of the major accomplishments. helping to overcome state exclusion laws, Portland NAACP branch stepped in the middle of a 30-year struggle to finally persuade Oregon voters to repeal these laws in 1926 and 1927. Contributed to the defense of Dr. Sweet of Detroit, Michigan, and 10 other African-American men charged with the killing of two mob participants sent to drive the doctor from his home. With the branch help, Clarence Darrow was retained to defend the case and a successful acquittal. Established an African-American presence and unions, which collectively established a framework for equitable treatment and many services and labor jobs, which had great compensation gaps between African-Americans and whites. The NAACP branch, Portland branch, has adopted the new motto, Educate, Empower, Engage, to remind itself and all of us that the keys to building a better future and enabling our bodies for the fight ahead are the ones that will unlock first. Oh no, I got to the very end. To unlock first our minds and our hearts. Please welcome Reverend E.D. Monnet to the studio. What a pleasure to have you this morning.
It's a good thing to be here and have my feet planted firmly on the ground.
I hear that, because as we go right from summer to fall,
yeah,
we are all feeling that we are in a time of change. I thank you so much for being here this morning, because I want to talk a bit about some of the work that the NAACP is currently involved in. And you have an anniversary celebration coming up at the end of this week. And we'll talk a little bit about that. Okay. So let's start with where is the NAACP Portland branch now? What kind of work are you involved in?
Well, where are we? We are located in the Lloyd Center.
Yes, that's new.
And I'm happy to be there after 105 years being in this state, in this city. We are one of the oldest branches in the nation. And the NAACP collectively is 109 years old. So we're right there in step with that. We're located in the Lloyd Center. And on Saturday, we will be at the Doubletree from 6 to 9, celebrating that 105 years, where our theme this year is removing the thorns of roses from removing the thorns of racism from the city of roses. That's a lot to say.
Especially this early in the morning, right?
Especially this early in the morning.
So what are the priorities? If I would ask the top three priorities of the NAACP as it celebrates its 105th year of existence, what are the top three priorities?
The top on our list is always the advancement for colored people. We are always in the fight to end and annihilate racism, first and foremost. Secondarily, we need to understand the power in the legislature. So voting is a huge deal. That's where we are primarily effective, and we have been over the years in helping grassroots organizations and people get out to tell folks the issues that really handicap our communities. And we also, thirdly, we're going to be dealing with this year the census and the importance of black people really mattering.
Yes, it is. Those are your three fabulous priorities, but I also know you have a fourth one, which is around the Portland Clean Energy Fund initiative and making sure that African Americans and other people of color benefit from this significant influx of new resources to support workforce development, business development, and individual development, specifically African American and other communities who've been left out of the economic engine. So
yeah.
I am very excited about that work as well. And you're absolutely right. This last legislative session, I was a bit surprised at how we were not able to do more with a supermajority of quote-unquote progressives in both houses, and how there still seem to be inequitable outcomes from this legislative session.
Oh, my goodness, yes. You know, concerning the PSEF, the Clean Energy Fund Initiative, the 1% that we asked as a levy for big businesses,
yeah. $1 billion in national sales, $500,000 sales in the city of Portland.
That's right, and we were asking for 1%. And the architect of this measure or this initiative, which you know her very well.
You know, right?
Joanne Hardesty, who was the president of the NAACP at that time, understood that that is what democracy looked like, for the big boys to stand up and pay their dues. And my hat goes off to you for that.
Well, thank you. As you know, that was a huge fight.
Yes, it was.
That communities of color took on. And I am just thrilled that we won.
Yes.
But of course, when you have somewhere between $37 and $48 million annually coming into the city of Portland, you can't rest on your laurels, because you know that there are other people out there. Just as I said, was it last week or the week before, we installed the first five members of the oversight committee.
Yeah,
right?
That was exciting.
That was very exciting. But it also was a great opportunity to remind folks that we're going to have a lot of new best friends.
Yes.
Because when those kind of resources show up in town, all of a sudden everybody was like, I've been wanting to work with you forever. Right. And I said, well, how much money are you putting on the table? Then it's a different conversation.
Hell
right.
Yeah.
So I am so thrilled that we have that process is moving. But of course, we have to be mindful and watchful to make sure that that program works the way it's supposed to.
Yes.
What's been, did you go to the legislature this year? Did you have a legislative agenda?
We didn't have a legislative agenda this year, but I tell you what, we're dancing with the stars coming forward, because 2020 is an important year.
Yes, it is.
As you said, we looked at all these progressives and
right.
this great energy towards righteousness in both houses, mm-hmm. and we saw what we got.
Right.
And
right.
we see what we're dealing with now. And it's not over. It's a long way from being over. What has happened is we've seen racism, and we've seen bigotry, and we've seen the power of uninclusiveness
yes.
Take a stand that has never really died. So now we're back on front and ready to fight. So frontline communities have to be aware,
yes.
and especially African-American communities. This is one of the things that we've got to be careful about. One of the things that we thought was really cute is being able to dance or to swim
right.
in the pool of
right.
people of color.
Right.
We're not people of color, folks. We're African-Americans, and we're black folks, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about how that looks for us and how it's diminishing the power and the stature that we've had.
Well, I actually see that at city council.
Yes.
When people come in with contracts and they say, we had 21% participation of MWESB folks, right? And I have trained folks at City Hall that I'm not going to just listen to that nonsense. I want to know how many African Americans, how many Latinos, how many Native Americans, how many women, you know, because what we've allowed in government over decades has been for people to combine all the groups
yes.
so that it looks better than it really is.
Yes.
So when you disaggregate the information, I find out regularly that African Americans rarely get contracts from the city of Portland. Latinos rarely get contracts from the city of Portland.
Yes.
The primary beneficiaries of city set-aside programs are white women. At least on paper, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it is really clear to me that we are woefully inadequate of holding people accountable. I mean, I had a contract just this week that had a 20% goal, and they got 2, and they wanted us to support it. And of course, I was the only no vote that said, this is not acceptable to me. If this is the goal and this is what you get to, and I say, how many contracts did this vendor have prior to? And they've had at least 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you would think they'd know how to find 20% people of color and 5 contracts.
Well,
right? But if you can get away with 2, why would you do more? So
what?
I just find that unacceptable. And so the more you unpack this information, the more you find out that, yes, the city of roses is not all smelly and sweet.
Well, you know,
there's a lot of thorns.
A lot of thorns. And it doesn't affect them.
No.
It doesn't affect their bottom line, and it doesn't affect their lived experience.
Yes.
So therefore, it's easy for them to just look over that. And who is the them? The majority. Those that are in the power seats, those are the who have been given the reins as stakeholders.
Absolutely true. If you're just joining the conversation, I'm talking to Reverend E.D. Monnane. He's president of the Portland NAACP. Please give us a call. You want to know what's going on at the NAACP, how you can get involved. I think one of the biggest misconceptions of the NAACP still, after 105 years, is that it's an organization only for black people. Right? Because when I became president, one of the headlines that got me in a lot of trouble was NAACP needs white members, right? And people asked me, well, I didn't know that somebody that was not African American can join. Are you still hearing that?
Oh my God, yes. But and I'm glad that you circled back to that, because in reality, the organization was formed with four white members and three black members. It was formed as a biracial organization in response to the atrocities of the lynching that was going on in Salem of black men. It was Mary White Ovington, the daughter of an abolitionist, that came to the forefront and says, we can't do anything about this. So much like the PSEF folk having to pay their 1% and democracy-minded, mm-hmm. she stood up to the plate and said, oh, we can't do anything about this. We have to do something about this. So she partnered with W.E.B. Du Bois and some other very powerful black legislators and lobbyists, and that's the inception of the NAACP.
Well, when I think back to 105 years ago, I used to say on my hardest day at the NAACP, I would think back, what must it have been like at the beginning of putting the NAACP Portland branch together? Can you imagine a group of black and white folks sitting around a table going, you know what we need? We need a civil rights, we need a civil justice, we need a racial justice organization in Portland. Let's start one, right? Could you imagine that 105 years ago?
Oh my, yeah.
Right? And so that's what I find, that's what strengthened me, right? It's because I thought, I think this is bad. And as you said, we are seeing a reinsurgence of racial hatred, racial intimidation, discrimination, and we are seeing it coming from all kind of fronts that we thought that at least that kind of discrimination, that in your face, that you, what are you doing in my country kind of rhetoric was over a long time ago. And with the insurgence of this new occupier of the White House, what it has done is given white supremacists a pass to say, oh, you can do this in public now. And how has that influenced the work of the NAACP?
My God, greatly. We need a whole team of folk to deal with the injustices that we are seeing. You know, you said something really poetic. We didn't understand that this was still a problem.
Yes.
100 years ago, you
right.
know, 100 years ago, right, 105 right. years ago, right. what did that look like? Well, right. they were serious.
Right.
They were serious about what went on. So what we saw was 50 years ago or so, our clarion criers were all killed.
Yes.
You know, the architect of the Civil Rights Bill, Mr. Kennedy, was assassinated.
Right.
So all of those players were assassinated. They gave us a few toys. They gave us a few goodies. We thought it was all good. And we saw President 45 come to the light and give us the idea. He uncovered the fact that we have roaches in the kitchen.
Right, right.
Yeah.
We're going to go to the phone line in a minute. Looks like we got a couple of callers backed up. But it is, I mean, if you'd have told me 3 years ago that we would be fighting the kind of fights that we're fighting today, I would have said, Reverend, you know, those days are over, right? We got new fights. We're not going to be fighting those same fights over and over and over again. I would have been woefully wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
We have a couple of callers on the line, so we're going to go to the phone line. Good morning, Ken. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I've been listening to your show. I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
And I had a quick question I've been wanting to ask you for a while, and I wanted to know your feelings about the Black Lives Matter movement. Has it been helpful? Has it backfired? And I'll just want to hear your feelings and thoughts on that, and I'll take your answer off the line. Thanks.
Thank you. I appreciate the question. Absolutely, Black Lives Matter's movement has been helpful. It's been energizing, and it's been a clarion call for folks to understand that Black people being shot and killed by law enforcement, or Black people being discriminated against in education and housing and employment and loans, all those issues still are prevalent today in our society. And what a great day for you to ask that question, because I got Reverend Monnet here. Reverend Monnet, you want to take that question too?
Well, yeah, I don't think it can ever backfire when you have the statement, just Black Lives Matter, and they do. As a matter of fact, it's become more relevant at this time of the day than it ever has been. Of course, you heard us talking about the POC pool, people of color, every person of color, and all that represent Black and brown people, we've had our individual struggles, mm-hmm. and it deserves a stage of its own.
Yes.
So Black lives really do matter, and it's an important time for our society to really begin to embrace that.
Well, you know, it's ironic because African Americans have been on the front line of every other struggle that has taken place
yes.
in the United States of America. And so it's kind of interesting when Black Lives Matters was being formed and starting to be visible in public, that people were concerned that, oh, all of a sudden Black people are only thinking about Black people,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think what we've learned over history is that if we don't center Blackness, then the anti-Blackness rhetoric takes over.
Yes.
Because even when we talk about people of color, what we do is kind of whitewash the experiences of African Americans. And so I try to be very mindful that, yes, collectively, we all have to work together to build a better society. But individually, every other civil rights gain has come because of work that African Americans started.
That's
right. So if Black folks weren't trying to get into education, then women wouldn't have been able to get into higher education. I mean, no matter what you look at through history, you realize that we cracked the door open, and then other people took advantage of those opportunities as well. Back to the phone line. Good morning, Lou. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning. How are the two of you?
I'm good. How about you, Reverend? You good?
I'm wonderful.
He's wonderful, and I'm good.
Well, that's a better combination than some other permutations, at least nationally at the moment.
I agree.
I had a question about two things, in part, quickly. One is just for NAACP in Portland, does NAACP have chapters, and I assume it's open to having chapters, either at schools like Portland State or high schools?
Glad you asked. Yes, we do have branches, not chapters, and we do have college branches. We are in need of a college branch here in Portland, so if you know anybody that's interested in helping us organize, send them our way. Mm-hmm. And we are involved with high schools through our program called AXO, mm-hmm. and we are actively seeking people who are interested in helping direct young people in that direction to empowerment. So, of course, yes, and that is your answer.
Well, there's a party in the park. It's an annual thing at Portland State today, so some of us will go and see if there's undergrads interested in trying to form an NAACP chapter. The reason I was asking about that, and then I'll let you go, is you both may already be aware of the incursion or increased racist presence at Portland State specifically in the
yes.
last few weeks. So the short description is just there's a student fee committee member who was hanging out and flashing, I guess you know about the OK sign with Proud Boys and white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So they were at a meeting with Roger Stone, who was in Portland a couple years ago, I think, and the Proud Boys, Joy Gibson. And this particular student fee committee member, which helps allocate $14 million each year at Portland State, was impeached but not impeached. It's a student government process, but the process was because people felt he was too racist that he shouldn't be involved with this particular, but it was a tie vote. The chair of the Judiciary Board voted to impeach along with another person, but because it was 2-2, this person still remains on that particular body. So you both might already know about that and have a comment. Thank you.
Thank you. My very first NAACP when I moved here was because of this fabulous young woman who was at Portland State University running their NAACP branch. That young woman, Irene Marin, now works for Portland Bureau of Transportation. That young woman was on fire, and it is at a time that the adult branch was very weak, right? Because as you know, and as I think most of the community knows, NAACP has been up and down in its 105-year history. Everything depends on leadership and whether leadership builds a base or whether leadership doesn't, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody's a volunteer, so people come, people go, life happens. But Irene so impressed me. I was going to her meetings. How can I help you, Irene? Because the adult meeting was not a meeting I wanted to be at. Yeah. So it just goes to show that in 105 years, the ebb and flow of this kind of work, this is hard work.
It is.
And people don't pay you to do the work of the NAACP.
It's not only hard work, it's serious work, necessary work. Right now, necessary work.
Yes, and quite frankly, aching work. Right?
Yes.
It's the work. This is the kind of work that makes you go home and just pull the covers up over your head and
yes.
go, "I'm not getting up anymore." Right?
Yes.
I'm done. And so I have a great appreciation for those who step into this role because I've been involved several times over during my time in Portland. And it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, a lot of energy, and a lot of commitment. If you're just joining us, I'm talking to Reverend E.D. Monnier, who is president of the NAACP Portland branch. Now, tell me about the event that's happening on Saturday.
Oh.
It is where and what time does it start, and how do people get more info?
6 o'clock on Saturday at the Doubletree Hotel. And I tell you what, don't shudder when you hear Doubletree. Isn't that the place that the man was thrown out of?
Somebody said that to me the other day, right? Isn't that the place where the black man was that called the police on him? It's
yeah.
like every place in Portland that has happened at one time or another, I would say.
But not just that. That becomes the right place to
right,
go.
Right.
We threw one black man out. We want to bring 500 back in, or at least an organization that represents that spirit. We mm-hmm. absolutely should be at the Doubletree, and you should absolutely come. It starts at 6 o'clock, and it is for the advancement of colored people in our areas and to do our due diligence of helping this resilient and extraordinarily intelligent base of people fly.
You know, one of the things I love about Portland is how many people that are willing to give of their time, their energy, their spirit to work on issues that really don't impact their day-to-day life. I
mm-hmm.
would say racism impacts everybody, but some people directly and some people indirectly, right?
Yeah.
But I've learned over the years that there are a lot of people, if asked, will step up and will do the hard work, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I hope that gives you some joy and some...
It gives me plenty of joy.
Wonderful. You have a... international singer that's going to be performing.
Yes, Zella Jackson Price, the matriarch of gospel music. She was just inducted into the Smithsonian Institute, and there was a movie here in Portland that highlighted the history of gospel music, basically starring Zella Jackson Price. So we are very, very excited to have her here with us. She's excited about being with us, and she has quite a story to tell.
Ooh, I look forward to meeting her. That does sound like a wonderful event. You know, I have seen the NAACP step up in ways that have been really significant and have had a real, real impact. Tell people how to find out more information about the event, both on Saturday and then your general membership meetings now happen at Lloyd Center Mall. They happen the fourth Saturday of the month from noon to 2:00. See, once it's in your brain, you just can't, it just doesn't go away. It's just like you can just pull it out at any given time. And so, again, membership meetings are open and to anyone.
Anyone.
Anyone who wants to work on racial and social justice
Please
in the
come.
City of Portland,
yes.
right? They're welcome. What's been your biggest surprise as president of the NAACP?
Oh, my.
Got you.
My biggest surprise and my biggest surprise has been how much people ignore the absolute need for there to be work done in this area of racism, bigotry, and uninclusiveness or uninclusion.
Right.
Or non-inclusiveness, pardon me. It's amazing to me how we want to close our eyes and stick our heads in the sand about what's happening in our school systems, the systemic racism that has really played a huge part in poisoning our communities, our redlined communities, remaining redlined, but just being moved wherever the herd goes. It has been shocking, surprising, and appalling in so many ways.
I hear you there. It is amazing to me sometimes how blind people are to the reality of the world we live in, right? And how quiet so many people are. So my understanding is that if you want to contact the NAACP, you can go to their website at pdxnaacp.org. And for info, and look for the Freedom Fund dinner, which is what's coming up on Saturday, starting at 6 p.m. at the DoubleTree. So I'm looking forward to the celebration because I think as hard as people work, we absolutely have to celebrate our successes. And so you have a lot to be proud of. You got the Clean Energy Fund over the finish line. With a significant victory, the NAACP has continued to hold state legislators accountable around clean energy tax credits.
Yes.
And are you still working with the Energy Trust of Oregon to get them to stop only collecting money from everybody and giving it to people who are rich, who own homes that are in good stead, so they could do their energy efficiency and get in, and get those rebates. When I found out about how the Energy Trust of Oregon worked, I was a little appalled, right? Because I thought, now, who puts together a system that everybody pays into and only rich people can actually get a deduction out of it? But apparently, in Oregon, if you're poor, you should be subsidizing rich people based on some of the laws we've passed. Think about the arch taxes the exact same way. So we have some real inequitable systems in place in Oregon that need people to point them out and actually work to change them. And I think the Portland Clean Energy Fund is one of those change makers that will force change where people may not be excited about seeing those opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Energy Trust of Oregon and its present leadership, I need to give them a thumbs halfway up. They're doing something to try and bridge that disparity. And they're very given to moving the needle forward where it comes to diversity and inclusion.
Well, yeah, that was, 2 years ago that you and I had our first meetings with them, right? Maybe it was three now, and I'm forgetting. And, you know, having good people in place is the first step.
Yes.
But fundamentally changing systems so that they're more equitable is vital, right?
Yes.
And sometimes people want to take decades or more to undo unequitable systems, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for the people who are living under those inequities, it just is too long, right?
Well, you have to go to the bottom. As I've spoken to them prior, we can have all these conversations on the top,
right?
And we can prune the trees back and et cetera. But until we go to the root,
that's right,
and reconstruct what was at the beginning,
right,
we're still going to find those inequities. And we're on the fast track to helping them do that.
Well, I wonderful. And I, if not, then I guess the next alternative would be a legislative fix.
Yes.
That would actually fundamentally change the dynamic of where their money comes from and where it goes. And I'm ready for that fight.
Yeah.
So if you want to join the conversation, give us a call. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I wanted to take a moment and talk about this week. We brought some experts to City Hall to talk about the upcoming, to talk about national best practices on policing contracts.
Mm-hmm.
We had DeRay McKesson and Samuel, who I can never remember his last name, who's the just the most brilliant data person that I've met in quite some time for such a young man. What a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to help get the city council and the community, because there's a lot of community members there, to all have a grounding in what model policing contracts look like around the country, mm-hmm. and what weird things kind of stand out. Because as you know, next year is Portland Police Association's contract is up for renewal. And we absolutely have to make sure that that contract serves the people as well as the officers who operate under that contract. So it was a very, very interesting week. So if you get an opportunity, it's filmed. So you'll be able to see that online. And I also encourage the listening audience to actually look it up as well. It was this week's work session on Tuesday afternoon. Tuesday morning. I was going to say Tuesday afternoon. All my days run together nowadays. Tuesday morning at 9:30, we had that work session. I have never seen such brilliant young men who have talked to over 150 police agencies, reviewed over 300 police contracts across the country, and they've done just a fabulous job of providing really impartial information just based on the data on the data that they collected. So I'm looking forward to seeing what's next with that data. Looks like we have a caller on the line, so we're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, James. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne. This is James Posey.
Good morning, James. How are you today?
I'm doing great. I'm not sure I'm going to have as much time to discuss this NAACP issue with you. So let me just say I need to have equal time to talk about
what James, that's not going to happen today.
No, I'm talking about the latest program. I think you're a fair arbiter of your time on radio, so maybe...
So anyway, I would really love the opportunity to make sure that as we're moving forward politically, especially at the city of Portland around police contracts and other stuff that's coming up, that we are engaged with the NAACP. And so whether that means you'd like to invite me to come in and do a city council 101 and say, you know, these are the things that are coming up that we would love to have the NAACP's help on, however you would like to make that happen.
There's so much surrounding the NAACP and what's really necessary. You know, the work of the organization is to move the needle forward for people of color who have been disenfranchised and who have had a marginalized voice in our community. As a matter of fact, I've gotten so used to saying people of color, I need to say black people who have been disenfranchised and have had marginalized voices. We need your help on all fronts to pull our organization to the place of its prominence and significance that would resemble the struggle of all the years that we have been suppressed, repressed, and readdressed to places that don't really do well for African Americans in this country.
Yeah, I think I don't believe there is a black person that didn't know that racism still exists before 45 was elected.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I think what's become crystal clear is that there are a lot of, and I put this in quotes, progressives who thought after Obama was elected, we're good, we can go home, kick back, right? Mm-hmm. The assumption was Hillary would be elected, so they would have really gone home and kicked back. I think that there are a lot of people that are still in a state of shock.
Yes.
That this country could change so radically. Who would have thought that we'd be putting children in jail because their parents are seeking a better life? Wow. I mean, just in what universe would that ever be? I mean, the United States has never, ever, ever, I mean, we've done some egregious things.
Yes.
But we did not put children in jail who were crossing the border seeking a better life. We,
yes.
That's just like a lull that we just never did until this administration,
yes.
Right? If you just think over it, I mean, just across the board, there are just so many egregious things that are happening at the national level, which is why I think having a strong, fierce NAACP branch in Portland is so vital right now.
Yes.
Because when you get hate from all different corners, I mean, we got white supremacists marching down the street,
yes.
having rallies in downtown Portland.
Yeah.
Now, Portland and Oregon has a deep racist history, but I think it's been at least 100 years since the Klan marched down the street in the city of Portland, right?
Why?
Up until recently.
Yes.
Right? And the fact that there are these organized hate groups that think this is the place to come when you want to show your hate, when you want to stand up and be as white supremacist as you can possibly be, that this is the place to come. And we have to ask ourselves as Oregonians, why do they think that this is a safe place for them?
Mm.
Right?
Yes.
Right? Because clearly, they could stay in Vancouver and march all around their hometown, right? But they decide to come to Portland. And that's the question that we have to answer. Why is that? Why? Because the police protect them, right? Because TriMet gives them a bus to take them back to their cars so that they can be safe. I mean, I think that's why they come here, because I think in Vancouver, they would get their butt beat. Just saying. It looks like we have another caller on the line. Good morning, Edie. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hi, honey.
Hi.
I was thinking that we have two ways of looking at this approach about children put in cages. If we say America doesn't do that, we're lying to ourselves, because it has always separated children from families and put children in cages. First, nations, indigenous Native Americans, African slaves, European slaves and servants, religious minorities, political activists, labor activists, children, Chinese. That has been a consistent Japanese internment. That's been a consistent pattern. But and we have done it when the U.S. Government took folks who were fighting the Civil War out to take over the land from the Mexicans, because the Mexicans were going to liberate slaves and they didn't want to allow that. And they moved the border over the people. And when people come back and forth, they have been caged. They have been. But it hasn't been as a systematic, intentional, obvious. I mean, there's always been systematic and intentional, but it hasn't been horrific like this. We haven't had it from the president, unless it was from Andrew Jackson, and it hasn't been. But whether or not it's happened in the past, we need to say, stop it now. We need to unite and say America can be and must be better than this. And we must not go back to what was some ideal past, but we must move forward to the ideal future starting right now. Stop the separation. We are putting, black men locked up and black women and children locked out of their homes, put into foster care system, Native American children taken from their families. We need to stop it now. And together we can, especially when we hold police accountable so that police are not interfering with our social action and movements. And thank you for your part in doing that.
Thank you. Really appreciate your call. And I agree with lots of what you have said. Thank you so much. Have a great day. Thanks for the reminder. I guess we have put people in cages over the hundreds of years that America has been America, and starting with our native population. You are absolutely right. We're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Sonia. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning. I would very much like to take umbrage with your comment about Vancouver. We are the place that has the peace and justice there. We have an NAACP branch here. We are very active here. And I don't think that those people are people that we want in our town either.
Well, I'm sorry, ma'am. What I meant was they live there.
Far away.
Ma'am?
Huh?
What I meant was they live in Vancouver. That's what they tell us.
They do. A few of them do live in Vancouver, and we would just assume they move away.
Well, thank you, ma'am. No disrespect to Vancouver. I love Vancouver, but I'm just saying, you know, white supremacists want to come here. They just should stay home.
Well, what's really interesting about that, and this is a comment that I made well over a year ago, and that is, who paid for the buses to bring those IWW types in from Spokane?
Good question.
Nobody has ever put it online. I mean, I've looked for it.
Right.
I have never found the research to justify why they came here.
Well, you know, I know that a couple of them, while they come and create disruption in Portland, actually are doing fundraisers, online Facebook fundraisers on the spot, right? So so they bring their cameras and their Facebook page and say, you know, give us $5 so we can stand up to Portland folks, right?
But I think the people come from Florida and so forth and so on. I mean,
well, the last big one,
summer vacation stuff,
right?
Them.
You're absolutely right. The last big one, people came from all over the country because they were really pumping it up, right?
That's the right
wing radio stations were pumping it up. We had Lars Larson here talking about it almost daily. But what was funny was they found out they didn't get the warm welcome that they thought they were going to get. They had nowhere to stay. They couldn't get food. Restaurants refused to serve them. So maybe they got to see what it felt like to discriminate against people based on what they look like and what they wear. So hopefully that was a good learning experience for them. Because
yes, I would very much like that to be the last time we see them.
You and me both. If we never see them again, it would be too soon, let me tell you. But the good news is most of them are facing some court challenges right now, so that's probably why they're keeping a low profile. And the cold weather helps as well. Thank you so much. I appreciate your call. Have a great day. And do we have another caller? Good morning, Wade. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
I wanted to, when I heard that poll about, 6 to 8 months ago about how 66% of Americans thought that separating children at the border was wrong, I went, well, yippee, we're only one-third Nazi. But what I thought about later was, see, they're not asking the right question.
Right.
The first question is, do you have children?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if the answer to this question is yes, now you can answer the second question, because
right.
You have what experience it would affect you. It's not just a hypothetical, you know.
Well, but let me defend those who don't have children. I have nine siblings. I was raised around a whole bunch of kids, right? And the answer to my question, to that question, would not change just because I don't have children of my own. I don't want anybody.
Mine neither. Right. But you get what I'm saying. Yes,
I do. I do get
folks. Thank God that can take in multidimensional ways without
right, without it being just about them, right?
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
What's your opinion? Oh, I see. What, do you have anything to think before you had a thought or what? Peace.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. We're getting minus a minute, so 503-231-8187 is the number to call if you want to squeak in or into the end of the conversation. Reverend Monene, I am so proud of the work that you are doing with the NAACP. I am privileged to be able to support the work that you are involved in. And once again, DoubleTree this Saturday, starting at 6 p.m.,
yes,
will be the Freedom Fund Dinner, celebrating 105 years of fighting for racial and social and economic justice on behalf of those who have not had a voice. I think that's an incredible milestone. And how wonderful. I hope that I hope there's standing room only and that people are excited. I'm also excited about the musical guest because, you know, as a black child, gospel is what I grew up with, right? And so it's in my bones. And so I'm always thrilled when I get to meet a well-renowned gospel singer. So yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
Right.
Anything else? Let's see. This is the first week. I'm trying to remember what week it is. The first week of the month, which means the... And are you going to have a general meeting in October, or is this Freedom Fund going to be it for October?
We're going to have a general meeting in October, yes.
So the fourth Saturday of October will be the next NAACP general meeting. What is bringing you excitement at the moment?
What's bringing me the excitement for the moment is being able to work in this frontline community and draw a broader constituency of all of those of us who are out there working for the same purpose, mm-hmm. to advance the cause of marginalized voices and to lift them up. Mm-hmm. You know, when you stir from the bottom, everybody rises.
Right. And plus the flavor is just fabulous when you stir from
the
bottom.
Oh my God, yes.
But that's another conversation. You know, I thought I was pretty busy when I was with the NAACP, but you are a small business owner. You have a church that has 30 years of existence in North Portland.
Yes.
You have a training program that trains folks who have been out of the workforce and moving them back into employment. How do you do all the stuff that you do and maintain your sanity?
I have a great team of people around me. Mm. I have a wonderful assistant who happens to be the secretary for the NAACP, mm-hmm. Antoine Tolbert. A lot of people know him. My brother helps me a great deal. So I'm really, really surrounded by people who are there for the cause.
Now, that's worth its weight in gold, that's
yeah.
for sure. What else did I want to cover with the NAACP? You went to the National Convention this year?
I was at the National Convention.
And where was it this year?
It was in Detroit, Michigan.
Oh.
Got a chance to taste the water.
Oh.
Don't taste the water.
And, actually, they're still having horrible
They're having
water
horrible
issues.
Problems. And, you know, we experience having to drink the bottled water and et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot to be left desired in Detroit, as there is in many of the Midwestern cities.
Urban cities,
Urban
yeah.
cities across
right.
the nation.
And so So does it feel like Detroit is kind of a ghost town now?
Well,
I mean, I think with the auto industry left, right? That was one of the huge, the biggest. Did they leave?
Well, yeah, most are gone. There's some strays that are still left. However, what I did find in Detroit was the resiliency of the people there and the strong African American base that is there.
Mm.
Building and struggling to get things together. I'm really proud of what they're doing and the stand that they're trying to make toward equality.
It's just criminal when you think about all the forces that have come down on Detroit over the years. But as you said, a resilient people and a resilient community, and hopefully they're coming back. I was trying to remember, I don't think it was Detroit, maybe it was North Carolina, because I was told recently about like huge communities where homes were in foreclosure,
yes.
so those communities are still sitting empty.
Yes.
Did you see that in Detroit as well?
We've seen that in Detroit, and you see that in St. Louis.
Yeah.
You see that in East St. Louis. You see
right.
that in Chicago. Being from St. Louis
right.
and having a church in St. Louis, I see that all the time. Fortunately, we don't see that here in Portland. We're really here. That's how a lot of things get covered, because
right.
we're just not the traditional city.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting is actually we did have that here.
Mm-hmm.
You might remember after the financial collapse.
Oh, yeah.
And the banks would not take back the foreclosed properties, yes, because they knew that if they just waited, they would be able to get much more money the future, right? And so I think about those missed opportunities we had,
yes,
to buy up many properties,
yes,
that would be today permanently affordable for working families.
Yes.
And we squandered that opportunity.
Yes.
So it's going to be interesting to see how we address this housing crisis that we're in. I continue to remind my colleagues, we only had a crisis because white middle class people could no longer afford to live in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a crisis, right?
Mm-hmm.
When 10,000 black families were removed from inner Northeast, that wasn't a housing crisis. That was merely economic development or urban renewal, as we like to call it. So it is ironic, as I continue to remind the powers that be, that this rhetoric around housing emergency is really focused on white middle class families.
Yes.
When you hear people talk about building affordable housing, I keep asking, well, what does that mean? And now I find out when you're talking 80% of median income, or you're talking median income is $78,500. I don't know too many black and brown people making $78,500.
Mm.
If you don't make $24 an hour, you cannot afford to live in the city of Portland.
Yes.
And I read recently that African Americans, there's no neighborhood in the city of Portland,
none,
that African Americans can afford to live in.
None.
Right? So that's the city we're in at the moment, right?
Yes.
So that's talk about reality check, right? We're going to try to squeak this last caller in before we call it a day. Actually, no, we're going to end it right here. Okay? We're going to just say this has been a great day. I greatly appreciate you coming over and giving us an opportunity to hear about the NAACP and the great work that's being done. I'm excited about the event on Saturday.
I'm excited.
I am so looking forward to what comes next. As far as the NAACP is concerned, and now the shoe will be on the other foot tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.
because
you'll be interviewing me as part of your webcast, and I can't wait to meet my buddy and friend Ramon Ramirez,
yes,
who I haven't seen in quite some time, and so I look forward to our conversation tomorrow morning.
It's
just going to be you and I for the next 3 days. I mean, there'll be hundreds of other people, but we'll just ignore them and we'll just like do what we do so well. So we're going to close this down in just a couple of minutes.
Yes.
And what I want to do is give you the last word. Tell people again how they can get in touch with you, how they can be active in the NAACP. I think one of the messages that you gave early is you needed an open heart, willing,
yes,
hands, and the ability to work well with others.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Once again, how do people get involved? How do they connect with the NAACP?
Start by contacting us at www.pdxnaacp.org, and you can get involved there. That will lead you to the links for the Freedom Fund and how you can really be involved. In my closing words, I would like you to know that the NAACP's heart and soul is to serve our community. We desire to be the inclusive kind of organization that brings resolve to problems that affect the African American and black community, and we are certainly interested in the injustice of all communities anywhere.
And I just want to say that I appreciate you stepping up in a really hard time for the NAACP.
Yes.
And I also want to say, keep your eye on the prize.
Yes.
The work that you're doing matters. It is significant. And my history with the NAACP has always been destroyed from within.
Yeah.
There have always been people inside, and I don't know if they are police undercover folks or just sabotagers or just people that just like the wine. But my experience over the years, and I've been a officer in the NAACP twice in my 30 years here,
mm-hmm,
and both times I resigned, right? Once because I was running for office, and the other time because crazy people were coming to the meeting with weapons and National wouldn't,
yeah,
stop it, right? And so just know there are always forces that are going to try to tell you that what you're doing isn't right.
Yeah.
But just keep your eye on the prize.
That's right.
Look forward to seeing you on Saturday. This
Good
has
deal.
Been Joanne Hardesty. It's been my pleasure to be here. on Voices from the Edge. And if we're all lucky, I'll be back on the third Thursday of the month. Have a great day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Good morning. It's 8:58. This is KBOO Portland. And coming up next, it's Fight the Empire, an hour-long special with Per Fogering. He's going to be talking about the impeachment and Ukraine and all of those fine things. At 10 o'clock, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Ken Jones speaks with Jackie Shannon Hollis, author of the new memoir, This Particular Happiness, A Childless Love Story, and Liz Scott, author of the memoir, This Never Happened. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, our hosts speak with poet, actress, playwright, youth advocate, doctoral student, and all-around creative revolutionist, Esther Renee Mitchell. Esther Renee Mitchell is the 2019 Spirit of Portland Award winner, and she will share some of the activities that earned this honor. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Behind the Bullet film screening on Friday, October 4th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Multnomah Arts Center in Portland. The documentary film Behind the Bullet deepens awareness of untold stories from the U.S. gunfire epidemic. Director Heidi Heumann will be in attendance and answer questions after the film. There will then be a soul box procession into Multnomah Village. Again, that's Behind the Bullet film screening on Friday, October 4th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Multnomah Arts Center, 7688 Southwest Capitol Highway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the East Portland Arts and Literary Festival, Friday, October 4th through Sunday, October 6th at FUBON and the Orchids of 82nd Community Space in Portland. The third annual East Portland Arts and Literary Festival features live performances, interactive creative activities, a book and craft fair, and a full family-friendly lineup of artists and cultural workers of color. Again, that's the East Portland Arts and Literary Festival, Friday, October 4th through Sunday, October 6th at FUBON, 2850 Southeast 82nd Avenue, and at Orchids of 82nd Community Space, 8118 Southeast Division Street in Portland. More information about specific events, times, and location can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9 o'clock. Time to fight the empire.